Hi, it's Rebecca Whitman, your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm a top-rated life coach, an international best-selling author, and a multi-passionate entrepreneur. I'm on a mission to help you go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. The experts on this show will help you achieve work-life balance so that you can experience abundance in seven pillars of life: spirituality, health, emotions, romance, mindset, social, and financial life. When you have all seven pillars of life in alignment, you are balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Let's go. Welcome to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm your host, Rebecca Whitman, helping you go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. And we have a wonderful guest today on the show. Welcome, Mark Sefton.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to being under your prowess and your influence. Let's see what we can co-create here today.
Oh, I'm so excited. And before we get into the show, the coolest thing happened to me last night. I was just telling Mark before we hit record that I was at a really cool event. It's a screening of the documentary. It's called Still Working 9 to 5, about, you know, equal rights and, you know, women's plight in the workplace. And there were lots of celebrities there. And somebody actually recognized me from my podcast for the first time. They're like, oh my God, I listened to your show. Can I have a picture with you? So everyone, our podcast is making a mighty dent in this world. And we have been consistently rated top 1% globally. So thank you, everybody who listens. Thank you, everybody who shares it. And we are a top ranking podcast because we have great guests like Mark. So let me tell you about his background. You guys are going to love him. So Mark creates a safe space for aspiring thought leaders to feel heard, find confidence, and ignite their impact. He does this through interviews, storytelling, content creation, and media presence. He has conducted over 5,000 interviews and is known as the king of conversation. For almost a decade, he has been a contributing author for famous magazines like Entrepreneur Magazine, Brains Magazine, Global Woman, and Success Magazine. He has also authored 3 books on personal development. They are Inside Job, Plot Twist, and Mark of a Man. So Mark, tell us about your story. How did you get to be in this space as such a prolific interviewer and writer in the entrepreneurial and personal development world?
Yeah, obviously it's a loaded question. I think I'm going to dread this question like when I'm 80, because then it's going to be a lot of tape. Thankfully, at the age of 42, it's not going to be too heavy on this side of the story. I always find it really interesting. There's a great thought that says life is understood backwards, but it's to be lived forwards. Yeah. And I think sometimes it's quite interesting to look back over the things that you've experienced, the things that you've had to deal with, the things that you've encountered, because often it does shape us. And I think that's always a really important thing to remember when you're going through a challenging time and difficulty, is to remember that often the things that we go through are actually to strengthen, to guide, to increase that which we will do in the future. You know, I'm a big believer in your gift in making room for you. In terms of my background, and I guess how I was shaped, and I guess some of the things that happened in order for me to do what I do now and why I do them, I came from a broken family at the age of 8. My parents divorced when I was about 8 years old. I come for 8 a lot. That was my only way to kind of soothe myself as an 8-year-old boy, trying to understand, you know, what was happening. And so, yeah, I used to have a very sweet tooth, used to eat a lot of chocolate and put on a lot of weight. And unfortunately, the thing with children, there's some beautiful children on the planet, but there's also some pretty harsh ones. And I was bullied quite a lot physically. And
bullied for being overweight?
Yeah, I was. You know, I was bullied for being overweight. And obviously, the fact that my childhood was already a challenging one coming from a broken family made it difficult. You know, my childhood was a challenge. I can't look back on it and being honest and saying I enjoyed it. There's obviously moments that I enjoyed, but certainly, you know, there was a big void in me. And I think, you know, when it comes to me giving people a voice now and getting people visibility, I really think that a part of that stems from the fact I know what it felt like to not be heard. I know what it felt like to not be seen. I know what it felt like to kind of be pushed to one side or not fitting in. And I think that's made me very mindful of those that I have come to do life and business with now, because I do see, I do feel, I do like to include. My mission really is to create a win-win. So you've definitely got that dynamic in terms of why I'm doing what I'm doing. In terms of the entrepreneurial, well, I had a very entrepreneurial grandfather. And at the age of, I think I was like 5, 6, or 7. He used to pick me up in his little delivery van. He had multiple businesses in insurance. He had a fruit and veg shop. He had all sorts of different businesses. He dealt in jewelry. My grandfather was very well known. And he used to pick me up on a Saturday morning, and we would go and deliver fresh produce to the local restaurant, pubs and hotels. And one thing that I really noticed as my grandfather used to enter into the kitchens of these hotels and these restaurants was just the rapport that my grandfather had with these people. It really showed me that the most important thing in business is reputation. Mm-hmm. For me, he had such a great reputation, you know, and his ability to build a rapport and his likability, his energy, he really showed me some of the basic principles of business. It wasn't that he ever sat me down and said, Mark, I'm going to teach you. He never sat me down academically. It was what I witnessed, you know, and as children, we learn by what we see, you know, and often we often hear that our children are mirrors. And I was certainly starting to mirror some of my grandfather's behaviors in terms of the entrepreneurial realm. And between those two experiences, I feel like they really helped shape me. And when people talk about are entrepreneurs born or made, which is always an interesting discussion, Rebecca, for me, it's like the metamorphosis from a caterpillar to a butterfly. You have to have the right environment and the right set of circumstances enabled to be able to birth that which is in you out. So I believe the basic DNA of an entrepreneur is within all of us. But I think it takes the environment and it takes some circumstances and some situations that move people from a caterpillar to a butterfly. I mean, that's very much how I kind of see things. And that's really, where I am today.
And how did you end up losing the weight? Like, what age did you finally release the weight and how did you do it? Because we talk a lot about health and wellness on the show, and then we'll get into all your entrepreneurial stuff.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's a beautiful story as well. And I think this kind of adds into probably the third dimension of why I do what I do. So I come for eight. I was very overweight as a child. I always loved football, soccer for you Americans. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people that played football in my school, they weren't people that I really liked. So it was a bit of a disappointment. But then this teacher came along. He was called Mr. Aldridge. He was 6'6". He came from a city called Hull, which was about 3 hours north from where I lived and where I went to school. And he came and he started to open up basketball sessions, which was every Friday night after school. I started to go to these basketball sessions, and a lot of my friends and people that I did like started to go to those sessions as well. Within 3 months of those practices, my teacher, Mr. Aldridge, he pulled me to one side and said, "Matt, I've seen your dedication to these practices." He said, "I've noticed firsthand like the impact it's had on your health, because literally the weight was flying off me, Rebecca. Like, I mean, basketball is intense. It's a lot of shuttle runs, as you know. It's yes. back and forth. You really can't go anywhere other than go through and push yourself. And the results of that were quite incredible. But we all know the power of the mind, and we all know about the mind and body and the body and mind connection. You know, so there's two things going on here. Firstly, is that I'm physically losing weight because of the sense of all the rigor and the vigor of the exercise. And the second thing that's happening is I'm obviously starting to feel better about myself. And what happened, because we all need a Mr. Aldridge in our life, and I think this is a part of the reason why I'm kind of now replicating his behavior by being Mr. Aldridge to other people, is he pulled me to one side and said, "Matt, I've seen all the benefit of this on you." He said, "And the other thing that's really impressed me," he said, "everybody respects you. Everybody's taking your lead. They're listening to what you have to say." And he said to me, "Matt," he said, "I'm going to enter our school into the basketball championships for the first time this year." Said, "And I want you to be the captain of the team." And I was like, it was the first time, Rebecca, where anybody's seen a leader in me.
Yeah.
So it literally went from having that brokenness and that difficult childhood to then a teacher having a belief in me, and through basketball, through the intensity, and then just how much better I felt in myself and the renewed confidence, I went on, and actually the last year of my year at school, I was the top point guard scorer in the city and where I live. You know, it was beautiful. And that was
amazing.
Yeah, it was. It was beautiful.
So Mr. Aldridge pulled the leadership out of you. And that's what I think leaders do, is they see something in people before they even see it in themselves. Mm-hmm. And they literally pull them out of where they're stuck and into a vision that the leader has of them. And yeah. And that kind of set you on a path of leadership and personal development. So that's great. What do you do for exercise now?
Oh, I'm a massive, I still play football. So I'm 42. One of my favorite quotes in the game FIFA, the football game, is "You're a long time retired." So interestingly, I always thought my goal was to play until I was 40. But the reality, Rebecca, is the fittest I've ever been in my life is when I hit 40 years old. And actually, when I was 41, which was last year, I ended top scorer of the football team that I play for. And I've never been a top scorer like in all the other years that I've played since I was 8. So it's kind of kept me going. This year, I didn't score as many goals, but we did win one of the cups that we were in. And my team that I play for have never won a cup. So that was great to be a part of that. So I do a lot of that. I run 2 or 3 times a week, and I do love tennis. I play tennis at least once a week, normally on a Monday. Yeah, so love being active.
I love tennis too. I played college tennis for Princeton, and I was nationally ranked. And amazing. I took a 20-year break because I was like just mentally burned out on it, because I played every day from age 8 to 20. And now I play a game called Live Ball, which I don't know if they have it in England, but it's just a really fun doubles game that people in America are obsessed with. So I'll have to tell you about it, and maybe you could bring it to England since you are a leader.
Wow, yeah, that would be wild.
It's really fun. So you are dubbed the king of conversation. And I believe that all business comes from conversations. Mm. So how can we get better at the art of conversation? Do you have any good advice or tips for us who want to be better at conversation?
It's a good question. I think I always bring it back to this point to start with, because for me, everything derives from self-leadership. Everything derives from your ability to know self and to really master the art of the relationship you have with you. So in order to be the king of conversation, it starts with the conversation you're having with you, and it starts with your ability to tune in and align to yourself. When we align to ourselves, then it makes it so much easier to align to other people and to other opportunities. So for me, in terms of being the king of conversation, how do we master being a conversation? It starts with the conversation we have with ourselves. It starts with that self-awareness. And once that is in place, then it gives us such a clarity to be able to dial into other people. And I think other parts of that would be the ability to ask great questions. You know, for me, that's one of probably, if I was to like name 10 maxims to really maximize life, I think, you know, to have a conversation, it all derives from the ability to ask, you know, great questions. And I think I do ask great questions in my interviews. And I think that that is really pinned in the fact that I am really, really curious. And I think when you're curious, especially curious in human behavior, human psychology, like, and actually really want to look under the hood. And not everybody has the ability. Like, some things can be learned, some things are innate, but when you have both of them, when you have an innateness and intuition along with strategy and along with, yeah, skill, then bringing those two elements together is absolutely golden. So I think that those two would be my front runners. And then obviously conversation is a two-way thing. I think John Maxwell says many communicate but few connect. So I think it's the ability to connect, like to be able to create a space where I may say something and it will spark you, and you will say something and then it will spark me, and there's so much more of that connection and being able to understand. So a lot of it would be that. And then I'm thinking of the other elements, which again, I feel like this for me would be more innate. I pay attention to the things that aren't being said, and I pay attention to the things that I'm not seeing. A lot of people, they only respond to what they can hear and what they do see. But if you want to go that extra level, it's being able to hear the things that aren't being said and see the things that you can't see. You know, and for me, those things are the bedrock of being the king of a conversation or the queen of conversation. Yeah.
That's a great point, Mark, because 70% of communication is nonverbal. Mm-hmm. So the ability to read somebody's energy, their body language, their subtext, mm-hmm. that really, you know, involves some high level skills. Mm-hmm. Do you want to know my biggest and best beauty secret? It is liquid collagen. I started drinking liquid collagen 3.5 years ago, and I am totally obsessed. I have never looked younger, fitter, leaner, stronger. My skin is glowing. My hair is thick and shiny. Eyebrows, eyelashes, nails, they're all growing, and I feel like I'm aging backwards. If you really want to know a huge hack to be balanced, beautiful, and abundant, you got to try this collagen. It is amazing. If you go to the show notes, you will get a $10 off coupon. If you buy 2 bottles, it's $25 off. And there's 2 versions. There's one for anti-aging and overall health. And there's another formula for fat loss. Both formulas are amazing. They taste great, and it's so easy to take. You just take a spoonful in the morning and a spoonful at night and just add it to your regimen. This stuff is off the charts. So make sure you go to the link in the show notes and grab yourself a couple bottles and tell me how much you love aging backwards. Thanks for watching the show, and we'll be back to our regular content now. So do you have any advice on how someone could read, like what's not being said?
Yeah, like I said, for me, sometimes it's hard to be able to segregate what is a skill and what can be taught. And then what is it? What is it like a gift? And it's just innate. Because I think society already proves that not everybody can see the unseen. And hear the unheard, because if we did, then I think how we would relate to each other would be so much more incredibly rich. We often hear, don't we, like the fact that you know, you never know what somebody is going through, so you know, so always be kind. And I even yesterday, Constance, she said something which I really liked, which was about to handle yourself. Constance. Sorry?
It was Constance.
Constance Leyland. Constance. Yeah, so she's massive into visibility as well, and I was on her podcast yesterday.
Oh, great.
She said something to me. So even though she's interviewing me, the beautiful thing about conversation is that it should be able to bring out the best in both. And she said, to handle yourself, use your heart. To handle others, use your head. And I really like that. And she was really emphasizing that point of, you know, we don't always know what somebody's going through.
I think what a lot of people are missing in the art of conversation is asking questions. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many double dates or dinner parties or events I go to with my husband, and nobody asks me a single question. I'm the one doing all the asking. And I just don't think they know. Like, they were not taught that the art of conversation, it's a two-way street. If somebody's asking you a question, you ask them a question back, but they just, they don't do that. I don't know if it's an American cultural thing or if it's the same in England, but do you find that when you socialize, sometimes you're doing all the question asking?
Yeah, I don't think it's probably an American thing. I think it will point back to curiosity. Because if I was to ask you, Rebecca, if you're a curious individual and if you want to keep growing and expanding, and even though you've achieved greatness, you probably are still hungry for more, right?
Of course. Yeah, of course. Every day is an opportunity to grow and expand.
And I think that most people don't even have that mindset. And mm-hmm. So because of that, the symptoms of such a mindset would then manifest through asking questions. And people aren't asking questions because their mindset isn't the same as what yours and mine is, which is to expand, which is to be curious, which is to learn. And obviously, for me, I've just wrote an article, actually, which hasn't gone live yet. But the premise of that is the greatest leaders are the greatest learners, you know, and it's very much pointed in that sense of, you know, the more hungry you are, the more that you actually will evolve and grow, you know. And for me, that's where it stems. People aren't asking questions because they're not curious. They've grown stagnant. I think, what was it? Is it John Wooden who said, it's when you think you know it all, that's when you really like get to see, you know, what you're really made of.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. Well, speaking of leaders, I know you refer to the phrase self-leadership. How can people practice self-leadership?
Yeah. So for me, like self-leadership, and I think it is always important to kind of actually get a definition of what self-leadership means. Because I find that, and I think this is really important, Rebecca, especially when we're in the podcasting world. Like even yesterday, I was having a conversation with somebody about the word naive. And when they were sharing their definition of naive, it was totally different to mine. And they saw it as quite a kind of a cute thing, whereas I found it quite a negative thing to be naive. Like, and I think that that's something to be really, really mindful of. So with self-leadership, for me, the essence of it is your ability to lead self, like through a challenge, through a difficulty, through praise, through victory. It's really how you deal with anything. It's for me, it's about your class and your poise and your patience. And so in order for me to encourage people in their self-leadership or how to reflect on that, again, it goes back to, are you taking time to pause and to listen to yourself, to what it is that you need, what it is that you feel, what is it that you're really about? And when I'm working with people around visibility and helping them make their mark, in the first step here as well is before you're visible to other people, you need to be visible to yourself. So self-leadership is about seeing yourself first before you even want anybody else to see you. Sometimes we get so wrapped up in being seen, and often being seen is to do with people's perception of reality. But in order for it to really be in sync with your own self-leadership, visibility starts with you seeing what's in you and you approving of you and you giving yourself visibility, which means just listening in and honoring what it is that you need as a human being. And it's your ability to be able to be aligned to self, tap into self. And then from that place, that's when we're able to move forward and impact others. If we want to impact the world, we have to realize that we have to impact ourselves first. And if we want to be seen by others, we have to see ourselves first. And that for me is the essence of how we move into our self-leadership.
So when you catch yourself speaking negatively or harshly to yourself in your own inner dialogue, how do you shift out of that to positive self-talk?
Yeah, I think the first thing that you should always do when it's something negative in particular is, I think Regan Hillier talked about tagging. So she tags the fact that she acknowledges, okay, I'm having a negative thought here. So, you know, when you're wanting to grow and to move forward, you do become more sensitive to the words that you're saying about yourself. And it's really important at that point that you acknowledge that and you tag it and say, I hear you. And for me, it's very much, you know, I would be writing that down of what that thought is. So there would be some initial tagging with regards to, it's one thing to acknowledge something, it's another to let it run riot and for it to drive you. So I think there'd definitely be an exercise and a response from me like that.
So tagging means just like acknowledging, okay, I'm having a negative thought.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's almost, yeah, giving that a name and just observing it rather than entertaining it and let it dictating and let it run away with the spoon. If you like, it's very important to be able to acknowledge. And I think, you know, with emotions often, because our thoughts create feelings, our emotions are just feedback. They're neither right or wrong. They're telling us what is happening in a particular event. And then for me, if I'm really in my head, exercise is my linchpin.
Yes.
It really is. Like, yeah. going for a run, it's like sometimes with exercise, in sometimes when you're low or you're in a negative state of mind, it's actually one of the hardest things to do. But then as soon as you do it, oh my days, you feel incredible. Like, it just gives you resilience. It gives you solutions. It takes you out of this kind of cloud, and it just resets you. Like, I can't speak enough for exercise in terms of the mental side of exercise. Mm-hmm. It's absolute life changing for me. It's like, you know, I have a lot of resources and an extensive toolkit with dealing with anxiety and when I feel a bit edgy or a bit afraid. Exercise for me is the first thing. It's absolute dynamite.
I totally agree. And scientifically, exercise gives you all these feel-good hormones like dopamine and serotonin and endorphins. And I have gotten through a lot of low times in my life, like my divorce, like losing my dad or losing a soulmate dog with exercise. I think it's great for resilience. Now, one of the things you coach people on is visibility on social media. Mm-hmm. And we talked about how first you have to become visible to yourself, which means you have to know who you are and what is the authentic you. So how do you coach people to become more visible in their life and on social media?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's quite a loaded question. Some of it I can answer and give people a flavor and an idea, and they're not like with most things. If you make money from getting people visibility, then obviously people have to sometimes pay in order to have such a situation. But for me, it always starts with the fact that, and it comes back down to conversation again, right? You know, Rebecca, because when it comes to content creation and when it comes to showing up, on socials, I think a lot of people make the mistake that they spend too much of their focus on themselves and their product or their service, and actually less on the ability to build a rapport and to be relatable and having that human connection. So for me, I always encourage people to make sure that 80% of what they create is actually really connected to that human understanding and experience, because for me, that it's through those engagements and that dialogue that makes people really trust you and you become relatable. Because I think if you're willing to show vulnerability, what happens then is then people will show vulnerability with you. It's when everything is so kind of good, when everything is always promised, like life just doesn't work like that. You know, we all have the ebbs and the flow. You know, sometimes with a pigeon, sometimes with a statue. You know, sometimes we're shit on, and sometimes, unfortunately, we may shit on others, but hopefully not if we have a good conscience. But you get the drift. I think, you know, for me, it always starts when I'm teaching people about visibility. It is about being who you would want to see, like, and what part of you do you believe people need to see and want to see? Because I think it goes back down again to, you know, the questions and you seeing the things that aren't being seen. Like whenever I look at my own content and I look at some of the stats, the reality is that my most watched like videos, say on like Instagram, are about divorce. You know, they're about something that has a negative connotation, but something that one in two of us experience. You know, and so people are wanting to find out how to get through that part of your life. Like, how do we recover? How do we go beyond it? You know, people are looking for that. You know, and so, you know, often visibility is actually sitting down and answering the five main questions that people ask you within your industry, and then creating content around those. Like when people say, "Matt, I've just signed up for the Brains Executive Contribution Program," and they get to write 12 articles, one a month, and they don't know particularly what direction to go in. In some ways, I kind of find it kind of a little baffling, because for me, it's like content creation is relatively easy if you really are understanding that it's about the person who's consuming it. I mean, this podcast, it's not about me. It's not about you. It's about the person that's listening. And when you become obsessed with the audience, or when you become obsessed with serving your client, that is typically the first few steps of visibility. Is people aren't impressed with, you know, your accolades. They want to know what you can like do for them, and that's why we all have people that we prescribe to, or subscribe to, or read their books, because they're teaching us something that we haven't mastered yet, or we want to see increase in our life.
So what are the five questions? Is that the who, what, when, where, and why of journalism? Or are there other five questions when you're creating content?
Yeah, I mean, there's certain things that I'm sure there's a crossover with. But I mean, I just picked five without much thought. But in terms of like, yeah, five to kind of like really hone in on, the first one for me would be very much around what is a current problem in society like right now. I mean, even today on Facebook, a lady put, my 11-year-old son has come to me and says that he wants to start his own business. And she kind of opened it out to all her Facebook followers. And I just said to her to ask him, what is the one problem that affects 11-year-olds the most? And then create a solution around that problem. Because that's the essence of business, is what problem do you solve, right? So that's like the first thing is really paying attention to what is the world or society in pain over, or wanting answers with, or enjoying. So you can ask this question and you can really focus on different elements of this to kind of really give you the edge and the focus. So, you know, that would be like certainly my first couple of questions around that is what is topical, and then what is a point of pain. And then outside of that, I'd be asking myself, you know, what is it that I have that other people don't? And the beautiful thing about being authentic is that people can copy a lot of marketing strategy. They can copy different structures and regimes. But one thing that people can't copy is your story. And we all have a story. We all have a story, you know? And so for me, a lot of that then is, you know, people say you should give people what they want, and then you educate them with what they need.
Oh, I like that quote. You give people what you want, what they want, and then you educate them with what they need. Love it.
Yeah. So, but it all goes back down to that rapport, that ability to understand, that ability and that trust, which again, it all derives from everything that we've said so far, you know, about knowing self, asking great questions, you know, all those things that really pinpoint towards being connected, to building community, and having that likability. Because often people will say to me, Mark, I really loved the project that we did there. Or they may say, you know, Mark, I really loved being on the Brains podcast, and because of that, I really want to do something else with you. And it all comes through your ability to deliver, to make it fun, as well as making it exciting and giving it depth, you know, and moving the needle forward. So important.
So were you divorced?
Yeah, I married at 21.
Mm-hmm.
Which was crazy. And for people that are in their 20s, my biggest advice is to never get married until you're in your 30s, because you just don't grow into your skin. You just don't know yourself till you're in your 30s. I honestly believe that. It's like my children, they'll say, you know, they'll ask me and I'll be like, you know, it's your choice and it's your life. You know, based on my experience, this is what I would recommend. But yeah, I married at 21 and I was divorced, I think I was 35 or 36. Yeah, so I was married for 15 years.
And divorce is 50% in England, just like it is in America?
50%. What do you mean?
50% of marriages result in divorce.
Ah, yeah. I think the world stat, though, is 1 in 2.
Whoa. And I live in LA County. It's 70%. 7 out of 10 marriages in LA County result in divorce. So if you're married in LA 5 years, that's like 10 years for the rest of the world because the stats are against you. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's a whole podcast in itself. It blows my mind, and I can use my late grandparents. But my grandfather, he died when I was 18, and my grandmother outlived him by 18 years. She died at 96 about 2 or 3 years ago. Mm. And I remember going into the care home. I went and saw her every Thursday, and we sat for an hour and a half, 2 hours, listened to Frank Sinatra. And she had great stories because she lived through the Second World War. She'd had diaries from way back, like even before I was born, she could go to October 16th and read like what she was doing on that day. But even then, you know, she'd start talking about my grandfather, tear running down her eye, saying, you know, like, Bertie, why did you leave me? Like, they were married for over 55 years and death did them part. And she talked about my grandfather like she was still in love. And I'm like, I don't have that experience. I don't know what that feels like. I can only dream or imagine what that feels like. And if that is real, because I've not experienced it, that's really, I find it absolutely incredible. If people are married and they're happy and they're in love, those people need to do a podcast and they need to teach the rest of us like how. I think one of the challenges really is the fact that as much as social media and our world's become smaller, so me and you can have a conversation, Rebecca, and we would never have connected, you know, when my grandparents were our age. Because the technology didn't exist. Right. But the downside of that is that we live in a world where there's too much choice. So when you're having a bad period in your marriage or in your relationship, it's quite easy to connect with somebody else because you have so much choice. We live in a world which is so connected. It then presents a whole different challenge. And I find it interesting because some people get triggered when somebody hasn't replied within an hour of sending a text. And yeah, our grandparents, they would write a letter and it would take 2 weeks before even they received it. And you're just thinking, how do people do it? How do people live through the war where their husband was out fighting and you're home just praying and hoping that the man that you love is safe and he's well? Like, what? It's like, what? It's just mad.
It's definitely a different level of patience. Well, I have to send you the podcast. We've only been married 2.5 years, not like your grandparents, but my husband and I are happily married. We're wildly in love and it's our second marriage. So I am a huge believer in second chances and happy second marriages. And I'm happily married and in love. And I actually did a podcast about it. So if you're listening to the show, go back. It was a few months ago and you can listen to an interview that me and my husband did about our marriage. Aww. So my last question, second to last, what is healthy masculinity? I know there's a lot of talk about toxic masculinity. What is healthy masculinity to you?
You know, I'm a big reader, a big listener, and I've not been able to articulate anything better than something that I heard about the masculine, the feminine. And they said it so beautifully, and I can't even remember who it was. But they basically said that the feminine is like the river the water, the flow. But the masculine is the riverbank. It's the container. It's what holds space for the feminine to flow, that both make the river, that one without the other is no longer a river. You know, if a bank is empty, then it has nothing, it has no life through it. But if the water has no container, then it obviously will just run away. And, you know, for me, healthy masculinity is holding that space for that feminine energy to flow. And so this is why one of the main needs and desires that a woman requires and is desperate for is security and is safety. And not just the security in terms of financial security, but the emotional and the psychological security. And so for positive masculinity, it's to be able to hold space where that woman feels seen, she feels safe, and she's able to flow in the beauty of who she is. And it's a cycle. There's a great book called Love and Respect, and it talks about how a woman's main driver is that she's loved, but a man's main driver is that he's respected. The more a man feels respected, the more he loves his woman. The more the woman feels loved, the more she respects the man. And that's one cycle. The other cycle, and it can be either way, so it's not dependent on whether the woman starts it or the man. The other cycle that is the negative cycle is the fact that if a man is disrespected, his ability to love his woman becomes less. And because of that, she will then disrespect him more. And then we have the crazy cycle. And for me, it's the same. It's the same with the masculine and the feminine. For me, there's nothing more beautiful than being met with feminine energy that's light, that's energetic, that's the fusion of tenderness and electricity, you know, and it comes through having and creating that space. But as men, I believe that we are to create that space in order for a woman to flow. You have to have the riverbank before you have the river.
Yes, I agree. A woman has to feel safe in showing her playful, effervescent, flirtatious, fun, feminine side. If she doesn't feel safe, then both are in their masculine and she's creating her own barriers to keep herself safe. So that is a beautiful definition. Now, I know you've interviewed thousands of successful people. And if you can condense it into one billboard by the side of the highway to summarize what you've learned about successful people, or maybe a sentence of advice that your billboard would say so that everybody driving by would have a better life, what would your billboard say, Mark?
Well, that's tough. There's one thing that I've noticed about the people that are very at the top of our game. You know, the people like Danny Morales, the people like Regan Hilliers, the people that like Jack Canfield, and all those people that, you know, we're reading their books, we're doing their courses. The one thing that I think that I see throughout all of them is they know when to get out of their own way. Mm-hmm. And that for me is something that I would probably put on a billboard. But then it would ask people, obviously, if I was to put on a billboard, learn how to get out your own way. You know, people would come to me and they would want to know how, I'm sure. But I think that very much would be probably the guiding principle, is throughout all those interviews, they all knew when to get out their own way. And often we do get in our own way. And I think with business in particular, especially with people like Brian Smith, who was the founder and the creator of UGG Boots, and definitely like with Rob Angel, who was the inventor of Pictionary, those two in particular knew when they'd taken their business as far as they could, and they knew when to pass it on. And I think it takes a lot, doesn't it, to create a baby, because we often talk about our business is our baby. And this is one of the reasons, actually, while some businesses fail, because they keep relating to their business as a baby. But just like a baby grows and it goes from a baby to an infant to a teenager to an adult, the way that we handle our businesses like changes. And so for me, yeah, that would be it. Know when to get out your own way.
There you go. You heard it here on the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. Get out of your own way, which to me means get out of your ego, get out of your stubbornness, get in flow, follow the crumbs that the universe is giving you, and also be teachable. Mm. Be teachable to coaches and mentors and getting another perspective, because sometimes we have blind spots and we are literally in our own way. Because we can't see our lives from an objective perspective or an elevated perspective. Mm-hmm. So, Mark, how can people stay in touch with you? What is your website? Where can they find you on social?
Yeah, so marksefton.com. Sefton is S-E-P-H-T-O-N. And then from there, you've got all my socials, but I always use the same handle on the usual suspects, which is my surname first is Sefton Mark, is Instagram and X and TikTok. Otherwise, you'll be able to find me on Facebook just through searching my name.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for your expertise. And listeners, thank you for listening. Take a screenshot, share it with me and Mark. We're both very visible on Instagram. We'll give you a shout out. Leave a 5-star review and share this podcast with someone, because this is a grassroots movement. A lot of people don't know that you don't have to go through life exhausted, drained, burned out, that there is another way to live. And that's what we're teaching you on this podcast. My name is Rebecca Whitman, your host. Thank you again for listening to the show. And we are taking you every week from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetized. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to another amazing episode of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant podcast. It's your loyal listening that makes our show top 0.5% in the world. I would love to connect with you in person. We're having our second international retreat October 3rd through 6th in Belize. If you like yoga, sound baths, and want to get all 7 pillars of abundance to a level 10, this retreat is for you. Just go to the link tree in the show notes to snag your $200 off promo code before April 15th. And let's end the year 2024 with momentum so that going into 2025, you will have so much abundance in all areas of life that you will be setting yourself up for the most incredible year ever. It is going to give you something to look forward to all year. Make sure you snag your spot before April 15th. And if you have any questions, you can always email me at RebeccaElizabethWhitman.com. My email address is on my website. Thank you so much for your loyal listening. And we will see you on the next episode. And some of you lucky ladies will see you in Belize. Bye.